This is Ozarks at Large. The civil rights movement of the mid-20th century drew from many different segments of the population, including young people, and not just college-age youth, but teenagers, adolescents, and children as young as eight. Dr. Daphne Chamberlain, a research fellow for the Fannie Lou Hamer National Institute on Citizenship and Democracy at Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi, is working on a book about children involved in civil rights activism in the 1950s and 60s. She was on the University of Arkansas campus yesterday to deliver a lecture on the subject, and she came to the Carver Center for Public Radio before her talk.
When you talk about children being involved in the civil rights movement, we often don't think of them as political actors. What do they have to be political about because they don't have voting rights? But there are issues that they had to contend with in terms of their education, the quality of education, recreational facilities that they had access to. Of course, these were poor quality recreational facilities, or they didn't have access to the parks, zoos, city swimming pools. So that's the type of activism a lot of these young people were engaged in trying to challenge the system of Jim Crow.
I imagine many of those who were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are still living.
They are. That is actually what made my project a success, being able to interview a lot of these individuals. And they have offered some extremely powerful stories. When you talk about oral testimonies, they can be authentic. They are problematic, but they are very authentic, offer power. And that's the one thing that I pride myself at with my research, is that I have all of these different stories that really speak to youth leadership and youth activism during the movement.
When they couldn't sit at a counter or go to a swimming pool or go to a movie theater, what would they do? How would they try to change things during Jim Crow?
Well, in the Jackson movement, and this is pretty much across the board when youth got involved in the movement across the American South, they would come together, organize, see what some of the issues were, what are some of the places we're going to go to. In Jackson, in 1961, when the Freedom Riders came in, that is the turning point for young people. The ones who were in high school, they were saying, you know, these are our heroes. They're coming in, and we see them as a positive role model in trying to change things for African Americans in the South. So as I mentioned before, they were organizing, and they were saying, okay, well, today we're going to send a group to the Jackson Zoo, and we're going to sit in. And, of course, the police would be on hand to arrest these young people. But it was all about access and equal accommodation for these young people, as well as making a difference for their parents.
Were parents supportive of these people, or did it vary?
It varies from place to place. With the Birmingham movement, for many people, if you see the images of the fire hoses and the dogs, a lot of people tend to equate that with youth activism. But a lot of parents in Birmingham really weren't supportive of their children. And initially, Martin Luther King was not. He didn't want to advance that particular tactic as a civil rights strategy. And eventually he did see that youth would be effective. But in the Jackson movement, many of the kids who were involved there, their parents were activists themselves. So they had a family influence, and everybody in the family got involved. But if there were some instances where parents were not quite as supportive of the children, eventually they would support their efforts.
You mentioned that Dr. King was at first hesitant to have children. Was that because he was afraid for their safety? He didn't want them to become martyrs, or he just thought that wasn't the right way to go?
It wasn't the right way to go. I think it was a little bit of both. You know, it wasn't the right time, but at the same time, you know, we have to be fearful for these young people's safety. And once children actually got involved and he became supportive of this, he was even criticized by Malcolm X. Malcolm X said, "What real man places his children on the firing line?" Robert F. Kennedy even expressed some concerns about young people being involved in the movement. And there were a number of congressional hearings that spoke to kids being involved and saying these children were tainted or being used as pawns. But he got on board, and I think that was one of the things that actually changed the tone of the movement when children got involved. And it actually gave momentum to the movement to get adults to support.
Yeah, did you find cases where children, young people under the age of 18 were active, and that might have drawn parents into it that might not otherwise have been?
In terms of the support, adults themselves, because of economic pressure, parents, when you have, talk about teachers are working for the state, so they couldn't be active in the movement. A number of parents who were working for prominent local whites, they could not get involved, but they can go home and say, Johnny, you know, I'm going to let you do this. I support you fully, even though I can't be involved. But it did really change the minds of a lot of adults during this time period.
When you talk to the people now, I guess, in their 50s, 60s. Did they think at the time they were making a difference, that they were winning?
Absolutely not. I have one interviewee who he was intimidated by his brothers. His brother said, if you don't do this, we're going to beat you up. And I'm sure, you know, when you have that type of pressure on you at home, that you, that can get you. But he ended up becoming one of the voices of youth activism in the Jackson movement. And he never thought of it as, you know, this is something with me making history. He realizes it now, but that was only just the lead-in, or it laid the foundation for him to become active in other movements even beyond his years in high school.
They had to be incredibly courageous. I mean, if you're going to go to the Jackson Zoo and sit in knowing that authorities will come and disperse, arrest, or worse, you've got to be pretty brave.
Right. And what's interesting about the movement, and we see this even in Birmingham, in Georgia, in areas of North Carolina, South Carolina, children would adhere to this tactic of filling the jails. And when the jails became full, they would have to make the state fairgrounds into these makeshift centers for detainment. And these kids were willing to go. And when parents came to pick them up, they were like, no, I'm not going home. I want to stay here. And the parents would often let the children stay. So that shows the type of commitment these kids had in being involved in a movement that would make things better for themselves.
When children would fill up the jails and then would be taken to fairgrounds, was there media coverage of that? And did that aid their cause?
There was significant media coverage. In terms of the Jackson movement, there's some media coverage, and of course with the local newspapers, there were the Jackson Clarion Ledger and the Jackson Daily News, run by the Hederman brothers. These were newspapers that were locally white owned, and of course they would put a shed negative light on the movement, so it wasn't always about giving any type of accolades to these young people. But there was media coverage, of course, of Birmingham, and Birmingham mm-hmm. is always that particular campaign that people tend to think of when you talk about youth activism and children being involved. But it did gain significant sympathy, not just from the national community, but as well the global community, and getting people to be supportive of the movement and sympathize with movement activists.
When you talk to the people now who were active, politically active as children and teenagers, what do they think of the generations that have come after them? Do they have opinions?
Many of them say that they think they've dropped the ball after the movement. A little disillusioned with how things are. They work so hard to integrate schools. And, of course, many of the schools across the board, particularly in Jackson, the Jackson public school system is 95% African-American. And they feel like they worked diligently and worked hard on the ground level to make some of these changes happen. And we've taken so many steps forward to only go many more steps back. So that has been the general consensus among those who actually give some type of commentary into what, you know, how they feel about what happened then versus what's going on with today's generations.
The people you interviewed and received oral histories from, have they gone across the board in what they do for a living?
Many of them consider themselves as human rights activists. It goes beyond civil rights now. They continue to be active in their communities. There's one in particular who has an organization called Southern Echo. And this is a civil rights, human rights organization. And this particular individual goes across the state of Mississippi as well as other states in promoting community building, community activism, as well as community leadership among young people to kind of rekindle youth activism and get things to be, well, get students to think about the motto by Barack Obama, be the change that you want to see.
Dr. Daphne Chamberlain is a research fellow for the Fannie Lou Hamer National Institute on Citizenship and Democracy at Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi. She was on the University of Arkansas campus yesterday to deliver a lecture about the topic of children active in the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. She's working on a book of the same topic. You can hear more from our conversation as an audio extra at OzarksAtLarge.com.